Thanks everyone for joining for messages from the Midrash for Ba'at Hanan. Wanted to mark the yortzeit for this week. Shosha Bas Usher Yudo. Just working on the sound here. Yitzchak Ben Mordechai, Chaika Bas Dover, Barna Bas Yaakov, Shlomo Ben Yoshua, and Yaakov Ben Yechiel Michal, their neshamos should have an aliyah. Okay, Parshas Vatzchanan. The Midrashim actually focus specifically on the very beginning of the Parsha. We don't really get far past the first Pasuk. There's six Midrashim on the Parsha, and I think by just looking at the last one, they basically get to, they really address the first couple of psukim, the episode of Moshe addressing Hashem and begging him one last time to let him into Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem denying him that request. So that's the main subject of these midrashim. As I mentioned last week, in general, Dvarim does not have a ton of midrashim, and I don't know if that had to do with a certain editorial process. If there are some that are missing from Tanchuma per se, I don't know what the process there was, but that's what these midrashim focus on. But they give us a lot to think about. So let's take a look. So we should actually look at, let's just look at the first couple of psukim inside. Betchanan el Hashem ba'etahi lemor. I pleaded with Hashem at that time, saying, Hashem Elokim ata achilota leharot et abdecha et godlecha v'yedcha chazaka. Lord Hashem, you who let your servant see the first works of your greatness in your mighty hand. Hashem Mikael b'shamayim v'aretz. You whose powerful deeds. Actually, it should be me el b'sh el. It's no God in heaven or earth can equal. And then you have a request that Ebrana v'aret ha'aretz ha'tova. Let me cross over and see the good land. And then Hashem says, Hashem Eli, Rav lach al tosef daber Eli od b'davar hazeh. Enough, never speak to me of this matter again. That is Hashem's response. So that will all be relevant to what we are going to discuss tonight. Then Hashem tells Moshe, you can take a look. Go up and look to the north, the south, the east, west. So he's allowed to see the land, and he's also told to give chizuk to Yehoshua to give him a strong resolve that he will successfully bring Bnei Israel into the land. So that's our parsha begins. So our parsha ties in a pasuk from Kohelet, from Ecclesiastes. The Medrash brings this pasuk, Shafti v'ra'o tachat ha'shemesh ki lo l'kalim. The text here doesn't give the whole pasuk. One second. Kohelet 9:11. Okay. Shafti v'ra'o tachat ha'shemesh ki lo l'kalim hamerot. I have further observed under the sun that the race is not won by the swift, v'lo l'gibarim hamilchama, nor the battle by the valiant, v'gam lo l'chachamim lachem, nor is bread won by the wise, v'gam lo l'nevonim osher, nor wealth won by the intelligence, v'gam lo yod imachen, nor favor attained by the learned, k'eid v'fega yikred kulam, for the time of mischance comes to all. So this pasuk is first going to be applied to other individuals in Tanakh, and then we're going to see how it all of them actually apply to, everything mentioned in the pasuk applies to Moshe Rabbeinu. So the first version of Midrash begins by saying, Lola Kalim Hamirot, the race is not won by the swift. So this refers to Asael. Asael was a nephew of David HaMelech. He and his brothers, Yoav and Avishai, were warriors on behalf of David HaMelech. So it says here, Shenemar v'Asael kabra galav ke'achad atzvim asher basadeh. So Asael was swift of foot like a gazelle in the open field. He was very fast. Shaya ratz acharei Avner. So at the beginning of the reign of David, Shmuel had anointed David to be king, but that doesn't stop some on Shaul's side to try to to put in a king who would be from Shaul's family. So Avner was Shaul's general, and he doesn't become the king, but he does become the mastermind behind the side of Shaul. So there was a long, bitter war between Beit Shaul, Shaul's side, and David and those who followed him. Shaul actually had more of a majority of the land. Second. So talking about David Shaul, so Asahel is on David's side, and he's chasing after Abner, who is sort of the ringleader of Shaul's side. Amar lo Abner. So as Asahel is chasing after Abner, Abner says, "Sur lecha me'acharai, turn away, stop chasing me." And he thought that Asahel would run away, because he was sort of foot. So Maktiv, what actually happens? By my ain lasur, Asahel does not turn around. And then Avner strikes him. He takes a thrust backward and strikes Asahel in the belly. So despite Asahel being very fast, and you would think he'd be able to outwit Avner, he's not able to do so. And then it says, nor is the battle won by the valiant. Was that Avner? So that's Avner himself. So Kshehalach Itzel David, as he went to David, there's supposed to be a peacemaking process between David's side and Shaul's side. So Maktiv, Vaitehu Yoav al Tocha Sha'ar, Ledaber Ito Bashali. So Yoav, who is Asael's brother, so Yoav is obviously upset that Avner killed his brother. But Yoav was also a top general for David. So he takes Avner aside privately. And then he strikes Avner in the belly. So despite Avner being a very valiant warrior, he's not able to escape death. So where was Avner's strength? So this explains that battles are not necessarily won by the valiant. Bread is not won by the wise. So this refers to Shlomo. Shlomo was one of the wisest, not just one of the wisest kings, but one of the wisest individuals to ever live in the history of mankind. I don't think I'm exaggerating there. But eventually, Kadosh Baruch Hu brought him down from his throne. Shlomo has a decline. So an angel ends up having to bring bread to Shlomo. So bread is not won by the wise. You could be very smart and still be out of money. So Velola Lenavonim Osher, wealth is not won by the intelligent. So Zat Eov. Eov was smart, he was wealthy, but nonetheless, as we know, Eov lost everything. Shinamar Chanun Chanun Atembre Aikiyat Elokad Nag Abi. So Kadosh Baruch Hu obviously had taken away everything from Eov. So again, you could be very wise and still not be so wealthy. Nor is favor won by the learners. This refers to Yoshua. He said two things before his master. So there's an episode where Moshe was picking elders by a lottery, and there are two individuals who were not picked by the lottery, but they still continued to prophesy, and Yoshua thought it was a rebellion. So he tells Moshe that he should jail these individuals. So Amar lo Moshe, Moshe responds, "Umi yitin kol am Hashem nevi'im." The entire nation of people should be Nevi'im. Why should I only have access to God? So here, despite Yoshua perhaps being a very learned person, Moshe did not necessarily agree with everything that he had to say. This also happens with Egel Zahav, because as Moshe is coming down, Yishma Yoshua kol ha'am bere'o. Yoshua hears a lot of commotion among the camp, and he says to Moshe, "There's a war going on." Amar lo Moshe, Yeshua, people are going to be relying on you. You don't really know what's going on, says Moshe. Ain kol anok v'ra. There's no battle going on, but it was obviously the commotion of Egel HaZahav. But these are two times where, despite being very learned, Yehoshua did not say things that found favor in the eyes of Moshe. So that's Hevei v'lo l'yod b'chei, not everyone who's learned will find favor. So these are different examples of that puzzle. So how does this have anything to do with the Parsha? This comes up in this next part, Devar Acher, another interpretation. Lo l'kalim hamerot, the race is not won by the swift. So Zeh Moshe, this refers to Moshe. Moshe was able to leap like a lion at the time of the revelation of the Torah. So Maktiv Sham, what's written there? Moshe Allah El Ha Elohim. Moshe went up to Hashem. When he went up the mountain, he was able to leap like a lion. Likewise, Vayir Moshe El Ha'am, he went down to the people. But nonetheless, despite Moshe's flexibility, his agility, and the like, he's still not able to get passed into Eretz Yisrael, right? There's a certain point where he stopped. Likewise, v'lo gibarim ha-milchama, the battle was not won by the valiant. So this refers to Moshe, she'am anakeh, b'malachim l'mala. He gored angels above, or at least caused a lot of trepidation among the angels. Shara'a Og melech ha-bashan itere, but he still was frightened by Og, the king of Bashan. Likewise, lo lacha chamim lechem, bread is not won by the wise, and Moshe, she'amar, Yer Giburim Allah Chacham. One wise man prevailed over a city of warriors. Omer Lechem Lochal. And nonetheless, Moshe went 40 days without eating bread. So, despite Moshe obviously being very smart, very learned, that didn't result in him being one who was satiated with bread, at least during that time period. Wealth is not acquired by the intelligence. So here, this is when Moshe says to Hashem at Egel HaZahav that Hashem was threatening to disappear, to send a malach instead of he himself guiding Bnei Yisrael. So even though Moshe was very wise, he still did not necessarily have the, and there he succeeded, but nonetheless, there comes a point where Moshe was denied his request. He was not allowed, so his request to enter Eretz Yisrael, at the end of the day, ended up being denied. So Rav Huna sha'al Shmuel, Rav Huna asked Shmuel, Ma'idi chtiv eid ufega yikrek ekulam. So the end of this pasuk said, what is the meaning of, for the time of mischance, pega, which is also used, it's a word that also connotes prayer. So what's the meaning of this? For the time of prayer or mischance comes to all. So what's going on here? So Amar lo atid hu shipala adam v'yana. Generally speaking, a person will daven and will be answered. So Amar Moshe achazot tefila. So Moshe grabbed onto tefila. Shenei Amar v'et chanan al Hashem. He davened to Hashem, but obviously Moshe was not answered at this time. So I think there's two important takeaways from here. I think number one, we learn that the human beings are limited in our capacity, and even strengths and talents that we cultivate at a certain point can all be taken away in a moment. That's what happens with a lot of the individuals from Tanakh that we encounter. So they had certain strengths of either being agile or being very wise, but all that can really change in a moment. So we talked about in the very first kina from Tisha B'Av. It starts with Shavat, that everything desisted. And so one interpretation I saw of that is that it was a very, at least in the eyes of the people, the time of the Beit HaMikdash, so everything like ceased very suddenly. Obviously, it wasn't sudden. There were a lot of warnings that this was coming. But because people didn't pay proper heed, so it felt like it was coming suddenly. But, the Khorban happened, from their perspective, in a moment, with the blink of an eye. And that can, unfortunately, that happens also in life, that things can change in a particular moment. So obviously, that should encourage us to have Hakaras HaTov for what we have. Not take things for granted, but to also use our talents to the full potential and to use them properly, because they are a gift from Hashem. And at any moment, he can choose to remove them. But so, yeah.
I think it's a warning against excessive pride.
Right. Right. Good. So it also reminds us to be humble. Right. That's the definition of humility, is not necessarily to describe yourself as being meek or to say that you're nothing. So that's not really what humility is, but humility is to say that everything comes from Hashem. So it's also a very important point here. You could, think individuals like, let's say, Avner probably suffered from a little bit of God, but I don't know if I'd say that about everybody who's mentioned here. But that's actually, by the way, that's characterized by Moshe. Moshe is the most humble person on the face of this planet. What that means is that he recognized that what he had were gifts from Hashem, and that's what made him humble. And when the time comes also where he didn't get everything, I should also, of course, remind us of, and this will come up in the next midrash also, not to be overly entitled. But the other thing this also obviously reminds us of is the notion that that it happens that Hashem says no to tefillah. And it's hard for us to wrap our heads around nowadays to what extent is Hashem listening to my tefillah, because without prophecy, we don't necessarily know how Hashem is relating to each of our own tefillot. But if we need evidence for the fact that a person can daven and that dream might not be come true, so we see that with Moshe, that Moshe pleaded, according to some midrashim, 512 times that Moshe pleaded with Hashem to let him go into Eretz Yisrael. It was 515, and Hashem says no. Hashem says no. So when we daven and we're not answered, so does that mean that Hashem didn't listen? Does it mean that he didn't hear? Does it mean he didn't accept? So maybe the tefillah comes true at a later time. Or maybe Hashem said no. And it happened with one of the greatest tzaddikim of all time. So I think that's something to sit with as well. So the next midrash develops the idea of Moshe's tefillah. And it says, V'etchanan el Hashem, I besought the Lord. So brings the pasuk to relate this. Fanita tefillat avdecha ve'el tchinato. And may you hearken to the prayer of your servant and his supplication. So this is the tefillah of Shlomo at the dedication of the Beit HaMikdash. But the Midrash describes harbeh shmod nikret tefillah. There are many different names for what we call tefillah. So, and they are tefillah, which what we generally call prayer, but there's also tchina, beseeching. It's tzaakah, there's screaming out, calling out. Zakah is crying out, and Shabbat is also an outcry. Renana is a chant, and Pekia is an encounter with Hashem. And Tefillah is falling before Hashem, and you have Amida standing before Hashem. All these different words in different contexts of Tanakh are used to describe different ways of praying to Hashem. So if you want to really get a full treatment of what's going on with all these different Lashonot, so you would have to read a book that's called Sharim Betfilah, or I think in English it's just simply Gates of Prayer by Rav Shimshon Pinkus. And there he really elaborates on each of these different terms for Tila and the subtle differences between them. I think a very valuable thing that you can see from this is that there's not necessarily one way to daven. So I think the way that we're most used to davening is through the Siddur. And maybe in a certain sense, maybe sometimes we improvise and we add our own tefillot, but sometimes crying out, calling out in a moment of distress. So sometimes we just do that naturally, but when we direct it to Hashem, that's a form of tefillah. Maybe it's not the kind of tefillah that we're particularly used to, but it's a form of tefillah. That's why I talked about this Rosh Hashanah on many occasions, that the Tekiat Shofar, in that sense, is also tefillah. We say at the end of the bracha of shofar, at the end of shofar, Mea kol turat amo Yisrael berachamim. That Hashem listens to the call of the Trua with mercy. So shofar is also a form of tefillah. It's not something that has words, but it's a form of tefillah. So the question is as far as v'lama lo nipela Moshe b'chamehen ela b'rishon tachnun. But I can't tell from the way this question is being asked if it's saying that tachnun is different than tchina. It seemed to have a similar shorish. But Moshe seems to exclusively use the tefillah of the former tefillah called tachnun here. Or tchina sh'nemar v'et chanan, I besought. So el b'sha'a sh'man Moshe v'amar l'tnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, har'ini na kvodecha. So Moshe had stood before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and asked him, please show me your glory. So Amar Moshe, Ribono Shel Olam, hod'ini na be'ezo mida tano heng v'olam cha. Please tell me how you run the world, how is it that you make this world work? Sh'nemar hod'ini na drachecha, show me your ways. Right here, it's translated as "Show me your principle." It's an interesting translation. Amar lo Kadosh Baruch Hu, hey, ani maray lecha. I'm going to show you. Ani avir kol tuviyah panecha v'karati, etc. I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will call, etc. So Amar lo ani chayat levriyah. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I have no obligation to any creature whatsoever. Kol bashi yaseh adam mitzvah. A person does a mitzvah. Chinam ani no ten lo. It's something that I do. If I give him something, it's because it's a favor. It might as well be doing it for free, but not because I owe him anything. I don't owe a reward or a wage to anybody. Again, I don't have any obligations for any creatures. I give them favors. So that's the end of this discussion, right, where it says, "Ani marlecha avir kol tuvi apanecha v'karati," etc. And then it says, "V'chanoti d'asharachon v'richamti d'asharachem." I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will be compassionate to whom I will be compassionate. This is actually a potential source for the idea that we don't really know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewards tzaddikim, rewards rishayim, and punishes tzaddikim and the like. Because here it just says, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, listen, whoever I reward is who I reward. There's no, I'm not, and Moshe wants that, when Moshe says, Harini na kvodecha, odiyin na drachecha, so Moshe wants Kadosh Baruch Hu to explain to him, like, how is it that it works? How do you decide who you're rewarding, who you're punishing? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I can't really tell you that. It just is how it is. It's a trade secret. Otherwise, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave it away, then we'd all try to be a Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? So Amar lo Moshe. Moshe says, "Im kein asali elai mitzvah v'tein li chinam." So Moshe says, in Moshe's mind, he can think, "I deserve to go to Eretz Yisrael." When the early midrashim says, really raises this question of the Odyssey in the sense that that if you don't let me go into Eretz Yisrael, then you're punishing me with the exact same way you punished the Meraglim, right? The Meraglim, you know, obviously slandered Eretz Yisrael and they were not faithful to Hashem, and everybody with them weren't so faithful. So Moshe didn't go in for a different reason. But like from Moshe's perspective, it's like, why do I get the same punishment as all of them at the end of the day? Okay, maybe that's an answer, but I don't think Moshe intended for that to be the result. Okay, so it's a responsibility without fault, and something say often applies. Okay, fine. So again, a potential answer, but still from Moshe's, but that doesn't, it's certainly not the explicit reason given for why Moshe doesn't answer. He wasn't as brazen necessarily as everybody else. So Moshe was humble. He did God's work. He made a mistake, but otherwise he did what God asked of him, and he was a tremendous tzaddik. So in theory, Moshe could have been entitled to a certain reward, but Moshe here comes and says, you know what, if everything is chinam, if Hashem's going to say I don't have any obligation to everybody, so fine. Maybe it's not on my own merit, but at least just as a favor, let me go into Eretz Yisrael. So chinam and va'et chanan has a similar shorish. When Moshe says, "Va'ad Chanan El Hashem," that I besought Hashem, essentially, he was asking for a favor. He said, you know, maybe in your eyes I don't deserve it, but at least let me go into Eretz Yisrael as a gift, as a favor. Kadosh Baruch Hu ends up denying that request, as we know. Again, the greatest tzaddik in the world can have requests denied. But we see that come up, I think, in Tfilah. I use sometimes a siddur called Pathway to Prayer. And every time that the concept of rachamim comes up, the way they translate the word rachamim, that, you know, we say, Mechalke chayim bechesed, mechayim beitim berachamim rabim. That Hashem provides for human beings with chesed, and he's going to revive the dead with mercy. So what does it mean to be merciful by reviving the dead? So the way they explain it is that we're not necessarily entitled to any of this, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is merciful, right? It's chinam. As a favor, as a gift, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us what he gives us, that perhaps he'll revive the dead, all that's going to be b'chinam. I think that's also an important idea when we daven, so we don't come, that's why we invoke the Avos at the beginning, that if, you know, if not for us, Zohar Chas De'Avos, for the sake of the forefathers, right? We say Navin Malkin, do it for your sake, if not for ours. So we try when we daven not to really rely on our own merit, because at the end of the day, we're fallible, we're flawed. But this reminds us that everything we have is a gift from Hashem. And that's also our mindset in Tfilah, that when there were three boys that were kidnapped in Israel 8 summers ago. So these three boys were missing for a while, and there was this whole 3 week period where people were davening. I've never seen davening, you know, as intense as I saw those 3 weeks. Especially I was in yeshiva, you know, a mile down the road from where they went to yeshiva. The davening there was very intense. But at some point, the mother of one of these boys, Rachali Frankel, you know, she had said in some sort of public venue, Hashem is not our employee. Hashem, we don't tell Hashem what to do. He doesn't work for us. He doesn't have to do what we want him to do. Everything is chinam. So hopefully that's a perspective that helps us appreciate the gifts that we have from Hashem, our favorite. And when we daven, so we daven from a place of humility, recognizing that we don't deserve everything. We're not entitled to everything, but Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to do chesed with us, so certainly should have the mindset that when we approach Hashem, so he's our Father, wants to give us what he can. That itself should give us chizuk that Hashem wants to give us his favors. Have a good week.
Thank you.